Hello, Blakel learners. Welcome to the Weekly Paul Show. My name is Tobias Sika. I'm a fourth-year Bishop's graduating student doing a double major in political science and German as a foreign language, and I will be your host for this show. This week, I have the great privilege of interviewing Aurélie Bonal, the deputy head of the European Union's delegation to Canada, on the role of the EU's diplomatic service in Canada, EU-Canada relations, and current events related to the EU. Aurélie Bonal is the deputy head of the EU delegation to Canada, a role she began in September 2024. With 2 decades of experience in French diplomacy, Ms. Bonal has previously served as deputy chief of mission at the French embassy in the United States, from 2020 to 2024, and as press counselor and spokesperson at the French Embassy in the UK, from 2016 to 2020. She also led the Western and Nordic Europe Department at the French Ministry of Foreign Affairs from 2013 to 2016, and has held key positions in French embassies in Ireland and Argentina. Ms. Bonal is a graduate of École Nationale d'Administration, ENA, and Sciences Po X. Aurélie is married with 2 children. Deputy Ambassador Bonal, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, ma'am.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So my first question for you, Ms. Bonal, why are there hurdles to ratify the Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, the Canada-EU Free Trade Agreement, also known as CETA, in spite of its provisory application, and how does the EU address the critics made around the CETA?
Well, first, you're right to insist on the fact that CETA is already applied, so it's already in operations, and consumers and businesses are already reaping the benefits of this agreement, of this trade agreement. You're also right to explain that CETA has to be ratified. It's what we call a mixed agreement. So all the member states have to ratify this treaty. And there's only 10 countries who have to ratify it because the other ones have already ratified it. There's a few elements that can be improved in the agreement, because I think that's your question. But they are very technical ones, basically around geographical indication issues, like some things like that. What you have to remember about this treaty, and what is the main thing, is that it's actually an amazing agreement, because since its implementation, since the beginning of its implementation, the bilateral trade has increased for about 65% in goods and 73.5% in services. So these are impressive figures. And so on ratification, it remains to be done by 10 member states. It's a process that takes time. But I think it was President Macron who said something like, if you don't ratify this agreement, that means you will not ratify any free trade agreement, because this agreement is the model that we have, is the best trade agreement that we can dream of. So, as I said, it's a trade agreement, but it's also something that allows the EU-Canada to really be very strong. And I'll give you an example that's very important in foreign affairs. You know that there's this war in Europe now. The Russian aggression on Ukraine had many effects on Europe. One of the effects was that we badly needed raw material and energy. We needed to diversify our sources of energy. And thanks to CETA and thanks to our excellent relationship with Canada, these materials and this source of energy were increased. So Canada basically was able to deliver more energy to Europe when Europe really needed it. So it's not just a trade agreement. It's something much more comprehensive and much more, I'd say, even more important for the EU-Canada relationship.
The CETA represents perhaps the biggest component of EU-Canada and Quebec relations. Yet it is not the sole component. What other important elements characterize EU-Canada and EU-Quebec relations?
Well, we've just mentioned that it goes beyond trade. I mentioned this example of energy, but you're right to say that the EU-Canada relationship and the EU-Quebec relationship is much more comprehensive than just trade or economic issues. It's people to people. It's historical relationship. It's also we are like-minded partners on many many aspects of the international affairs agenda. You mentioned Quebec, and it's something that is also important about CETA. I think it was one of the first trade agreements in which provinces were able to negotiate with the federal government. So basically, I think the Pierre-Marc Johnson, former premier of Quebec, was part of this negotiation. So Quebec has really had its say in this agreement.
So you're absolutely right. CETA plays a very important role in the relationship, both in the Canada-EU relationship, but also the Quebec-EU relationship. It's the cornerstone of our relationship. And I've given you the figures of trade for Canada as a whole, but you're mentioning Quebec. I know you're a student here at Bishop University. I'll give you the figure for Quebec. It's $40 billion worth of trade exchange per year in the framework, in the context of CETA. But of course, the Canada-EU relationship and the Quebec-EU relationship cannot be summarized just in trade issues. There's much more to in this relationship, people-to-people relations, historical links. We are also extremely very like-minded on foreign affairs issues, crucial issues. Just to give you an example about Quebec, Canada and the EU have signed recently this year in July an agreement that's called Horizon Europe. And this agreement was signed in Montreal. So really Quebec was at the center of it. And what we are trying to achieve with this program is that we want to develop the relationship on innovation and technology research. And so this program, which will have huge fundings, will allow universities and research labs, businesses to work together on crucial issues such as oceans, climate change, research for cancer, all these kind of things. And we are very happy about this. This signature is a very important milestone of the EU-Canada relationship.
So I guess what you've mentioned in the second question ties in more with this third one, which is, what can Canada learn from the EU's climate policies and vice versa?
Climate action is really at the heart of what we are doing in the EU. We constantly exchange views and ideas on these issues with Canada. We both have very ambitious goals to reach carbon neutrality. And we exchange better practices on this issue, and I'll give you a very concrete example. We have a program that allows cities in Europe and cities in Canada to exchange and discuss about their best practices, about the challenges they face, about how they can solve these issues in a very, very concrete manner. I had a meeting with the mayor of Guelph, for example, and he was explaining how they're working around housing and isolation of houses, for example. And this is a very good example for European cities to just be inspired about. And to give you another example of how tight the cooperation is on climate issues, we had a summit between Canada and the EU last year, and we announced at that summit an EU-Canada Green Alliance, which aims to address the triple challenges of climate change, which are basically biodiversity loss, pollution, and climate change.
You are hearing the Weekly Pulse Show with Tobias Sika. And this week, I'm interviewing Aurélie Bonal, the deputy head of the European Union's delegation to Canada, on the role of the EU's diplomatic service in Canada, EU-Canada relations, and current events related to the EU. So, Ms. Bonal, following the European Parliament election last June, what ideas and initiatives does the new European Commission bring for Europe and the EU?
So as you know, the new commission has just started its work on the 1st of December. And we are gathering all our ideas in what we call the strategic agenda for the EU. And in this strategic agenda, basically, there are three pillars. First, a free and democratic Europe. Second, a strong and secure Europe. And third, a prosperous and competitive Europe. So what does it mean? It's nice words, but concretely, what does it mean? Free and democratic Europe, concretely, it means that we are going to tackle issues such as foreign interferences in our election process, which is a major issue. And I know it's also an issue here in Canada and in North America in general. Fighting disinformation also, notably on social media, which is really something that all countries, issues that all countries are facing. Strong and secure Europe, what does it mean? Well, it means continuing supporting Ukraine. I mentioned Ukraine when you raised the issue of trade and energy. It means that we want to develop our industrial base for defense. We actually now have a new commissioner for defense. It really shows how important the defense issues are now, and especially after the Russian aggression against Ukraine. Lastly, a prosperous and competitive Europe. So behind those big words, what we want to say is that we really want to achieve securing our strategic supply chains, invest in future technology, and defend our trade interests. And of course, for that, we will continue to work with like-minded partners such as Canada. Canada is going to preside the G7 next year, so it's going to be very important for us, for the delegation, the EU delegation in Ottawa, to follow all this work that Canada is going to do next year.
And your comments on European prosperity and European competitiveness tie well into this next question, which is Mario Draghi, the European Central Bank's former president, released last September 9th his report on the future of European competitiveness. Which key takeaways in the report does the EU wish to consider and or implement?
So there were different very important reports that were written this year. You mentioned Mario Draghi's report, which was called The Future of European Competitiveness. And there's also Enrico Letta's report, which is entitled Much More Than a Market. These reports are really a wake-up call for the EU and for all the actors in the EU. Business, as usual, is no longer an option. Europe needs to be more competitive. We must support our industry, and we must support our industry to go through decarbonization, through innovation, and we have to turn this into a competitive advantage. That means bringing down energy prices. That means mobilizing public and private investment, improving the business environment, cutting unnecessary red tape. That's one of the key takeaway. Another thing is we need more skills. You know that we are in an era of wonderful but huge changes on tech issues. And for that, we need Europe to be equipped for the clean and digital transition. We also need to be more resilient. I mentioned the importance of defending our trade interests, but we also need to build more robust industrial value chains to access to critical raw materials. And I know Canada is full of critical raw materials. And we also need to do better on building our energy and digital grids, for example. And this was this is in the report that you mentioned, Mario Draghi's report, the focus on competitiveness and strengthening the EU's single market, like to unlock the full potential of the EU's single market, was really at the heart of the discussions of the EU leaders at the last council meeting in Budapest. It was just a few weeks ago at the beginning of November.
Now, while many national delegations take care of immigration and their nationals' citizenship and documents, the EU does not act directly in these competencies. What is the EU's delegation role in Canada, and what services, if any, do they offer to individuals?
So you're right. If you hold an EU passport, which I think is the case, and you want to renew it, you're going to go to your embassy. You're not going to go to the EU delegation. If you're a Canadian citizen who is seeking a long séjour visa in Europe, and like if and I think you mentioned the fact that you wanted to study in Europe in the following years, you will need to contact the consular section of the embassy of the country you want to work in Europe. The EU delegation doesn't do that. What we do for citizens is we have this what we call a coordination role for consular affairs, and this doesn't look very concrete. So I will give you an example. When the pandemic hit in 2020, we really played a significant coordination role. For example, to repatriate the EU citizens before borders closed. So that was really important for the EU citizens. Another example, you remember this wildfire season in Quebec in 2023. Well, 360 French, Spanish, and Portuguese firefighters were deployed to battle wildfire. And this was coordinated at the EU level. Another example, there's a very, very deep crisis in the Middle East and in Lebanon, and we have EU citizens who are seeking to evacuate Lebanon. Thanks to the work of the EU delegation in Canada, we were able to coordinate with the Canadian authorities, and the Canadian authorities provided seats in planes that there were that they were sending in order to evacuate the Canadian citizens from Lebanon. So that's the kind of things we do for the EU citizens.
You are hearing the Weekly Pulse Show with Tobias Sika, and this week I'm interviewing Aurélie Bonal, the deputy head of the European Union's delegation to Canada, on the role of the EU's diplomatic service in Canada, EU-Canada relations, and current events related to the EU. So my last question for you, Ms. Bonal, would be, does the European delegation coordinate policies and objectives with EU member state delegation outside of the EU, or are they independent from one another?
So the simple answer is both. So for example, there are issues where the EU has the competence, trade. So on trade, we pretty much deal directly with the Canadian authorities. Of course, the member states are aware and they're in the loop. They can add their views. But the negotiation is handled by the EU because trade is a competence of the EU. Now, on other issues, you mentioned passport. This is not an EU competence, so the EU delegation doesn't deal with this issue. We also have a diplomatic mission, and for this, our job is to facilitate coordination and ensure coherence in the EU foreign policy. This is what the EEAS, which is basically the Foreign Affairs Ministry of the EU, if you want to simplify things. So we also have a diplomatic mission here in the EU delegation in Ottawa, and our job is to facilitate coordination and ensure coherence in the EU foreign policy. We sometimes go to Global Affairs Canada or other Canadian ministries. We go accompanied by member states to express our position or, for example, to ask for Canadian support at the United Nations in New York, for example, or during the COP meetings on climate issues. And what really makes the EU unique is it's the fact that it might not be one voice on foreign affairs, but it's one message.
Thank you very much, Aurélie, for being part of this interview. Would you like to add anything else?
I've just arrived to Canada, actually. It's only been 3 months I'm here. So I must say I'm very happy to be here with my family. It's a wonderful country. I've already visited Quebec, and I hope I'll be able to visit more provinces of Canada. I'm a bit worried about the winter, but I'm getting ready for it. Thank you.
This is it, folks. I hope you appreciated my political podcast today, and I am looking forward to having you for next week's show. I wish to thank the EU's delegation to Canada, with special thanks to Diodora Boucour for making this interview possible. Next week will be my final episode of the Weekly Pulse Show, where I will be interviewing Mr. Claude Charron, municipal councillor at Sherbrooke City Hall and president of the borough of Lennoxville. On the role he plays in the city of Sherbrooke, with the city's strengths and challenges. If you have any questions or would like to submit comments regarding my radio show, write to me at tsika20@ubishops.ca. That is tsika20@ubishops.ca.